So the next talk is by Agam Ohanian from Vienna about singularity theorems with C1 metrics.
Okay. Can you hear me? Yeah? Is this better?
I can hear very well.
Okay. Hi everyone, I'm Agam Ohanian, and today I want to talk about our recent result, which is the C1 version of the Hawking-Penrose singularity theorem. So this is joint work with Michael Kunzinger, Benedikt Schinnerl, and Roland Steinbauer. And so before I start, I want to thank all my collaborators in Vienna, and I also want to thank the organizers for the opportunity to present this work. Okay, so before we start out, let's just collect some general ideas of what singularity theorems are all about. So singularity theorems, they yield the existence of incomplete causal geodesics under physically reasonable assumptions. And they all more or less follow the same pattern. This was described by Senovilla. So this is this pattern singularity theorem, where a spacetime has incomplete causal geodesics if it satisfies an energy condition, a causality condition, and some initial or boundary condition. And how does the proof more or less always go? So this is for the classical case. Well, your initial condition, let's say some positive convergence on your Cauchy surface or something, this gives you that geodesics initially start focusing. With the help of the energy condition, you then conclude that the geodesics have to keep focusing. And so you derive the existence of a focal point. But your causality says where you now have a focal point, there cannot be one. And you now have a contradiction. And so what is the conclusion of this? The conclusion is that not every causal geodesic can exist forever. And this is the result that you want to prove. So classically, singularity theorems were proven for smooth spacetimes, but you never really derive curvature, so we can safely say that they are valid for C2 spacetimes. What is their weak point? Well, say you have concluded that some causal geodesic is incomplete in your C2 spacetime, but you have some, let's say, C11 extension of your spacetime where the geodesic is complete. That wouldn't really be something that you would interpret as a singularity. So this motivates why we should study singularity theorems for metric which are below C2. In the context of extensions, I want to mention this result by Spiersky, who proved that the Schwarzschild singularity at the r equals 0 hypersurface, this is really, really a singularity in the sense that Schwarzschild is even C0 inextendable to r equals 0. The classical sort of Kretschmann scalar blowing up argument only shows that it is C11 inextendable. So this is a lot more than that. And also in many examples and natural constructions in GR, you simply do not get metrics which are C2, match spacetimes being a large class of important such examples. Okay, so now this was a motivation as to why we should study metrics of low regularity. What has been studied so far? So C11 metrics have been studied very intensively over the past decade or so. They indicate finite jumps in meta variables, and the curvature is still bounded, and the geodesic equation still has unique solutions for such metrics. And so many of the standard tools are still available, albeit in a weaker form. So you still have an exponential map, you have convex and normal neighborhoods and so on, but it should be mentioned that the notion of conjugate and focal points stop. So there is as of yet no sensible notion of conjugate and focal points for C11 metrics. So there is a lot more than I mentioned here, just some references for the singularity theorems which were proven in this regularity. And more recently, regularity has been lowered even further to C1 metrics. This was initiated by Graf, who sort of developed many of the general methods for C1 metrics and then went on to prove the Hawking and the Penrose singularity theorems in this regularity. and this was followed up by work from Schinnell and Steinbauer, who proved the Ganon-Lie theorems for C1 metrics, which more or less relates the topology of the manifold to the existence of singularities. And so now in this talk, we are interested in the Hawking-Penrose theorem. Let us recall the classical result. So this is often regarded as the most general of the classical singularity theorems. So let MG be a smooth, or C2, space-time satisfying the following. MG is chronological, so there are no time-like loops. It satisfies the strong energy condition. It satisfies the genericity condition along each inextendable causal geodesic, which means that this tidal force operator is, for every geodesic, there is a parameter such that this tidal force operator is not the zero operator, which more or less means that along every causal geodesic, there is some non-trivial gravitational interaction happening at some point. There exists one of the following, so either a compact achronal edgeless set, a trapped point, or a trapped surface. And if you have all of this, then your spacetime contains incomplete causal geodesics. The fourth point was then extended to include trapped submanifolds of any codimension by Galloway and Senovia. So this is really general in the sense that you don't need any powerful causality on M to have a singularity theorem. So MG need not be globally hyperbolic or anything like that. Okay. So now we want to transition to C1 from the well-studied C11 case. So what changes in C1? So when your metric is C1, your Christoffel's or your Levi-Civita connection is C0. So the geodesic equation is an ODE with C0 coefficient. So it is still solvable for any initial data, but it is not uniquely solvable. And this leads to the phenomenon of geodesic branching. So you may have, for a point and a vector, you may have many geodesics satisfying the equation with that initial data. And since we don't have any unique geodesics, we don't have any sensible notion of an exponential map, and hence no convex or normal neighborhoods. Moreover, geodesics need not maximize the time separation or the Lorentzian distance, even locally. As I mentioned, the Levi-Civita connection is C0 in this case, and hence curvature, which is more or less the derivative of that, is a distribution, but it is not just any distribution. It is a distribution of order 1 as more or less a derivative of a C0 function. And this is very important because this means that curvature tensors can take C1 vector fields as arguments. And this is needed to formulate a distributional version of the genericity condition because we are interested in extending vector fields locally via parallel transport methods, and this will only give C1 vector fields generally. So here you see the genericity condition. So classically we said that the tidal force operator, which is an operator as you see here, that this is not identically zero at some t, and distributionally you want an object of this form to be strictly greater than some constant for local C1 vector fields which are close to gamma prime and the vector field normal to gamma prime. So I don't want to bore you with details, but these are the objects that we consider. Okay, and so what are some of the methods that we then use to prove the Hawking-Penrose theorem? Well, we understand smooth metrics much better than C1 metrics, so we want to regularize. There are two methods of doing so. The first one is more or less chart-wise convolution, which is behaves very well, and we understand its analytical properties very well. But in regards to causality, this is very hard to handle, which is why we also need regularizations adapted to the causality. And these are these G epsilon hat and G epsilon check metrics, which correspond to regularizing G by metrics with strictly larger light cones and strictly smaller light cones. And these were developed by Kruschel and Grant. And these two regularizations are very well compatible. So their difference goes to zero even in C infinity, so in all derivatives. And more importantly, the difference of their curvature tensors go to zero point-wise, so locally uniformly, and not just as distributions, which is very, very crucial. And why do we need both? Well, this is sort of a sample argument which appears. Say you start out with some energy condition, some distributional energy condition on your C1 metric. You then get a point-wise energy condition you get a point-wise condition by simply taking the convolution. You can, in a C0 limit sense, take the convolution inside, so you now have the regularized metrics, and then you can, again in a C0 sense, get an almost energy condition for the causally regularized metrics. And so you now derive from a distributional energy condition an almost classical energy condition for the causal regularizations, where you can now start working further. Okay, and so the result that we have arrived at is the following. So let MG be a C1 spacetime satisfying the following. So MG is causal, so there are no causal loops. The distributional time-like and null energy conditions hold. So the distributional time-like energy condition is just Ricci non-negative in a distributional sense. The null energy condition is a little bit more subtle. The distributional genericity condition holds along any inextendable causal geodesic. Then there is a new sort of condition, which is that MG is maximally causally non-branching. So maximal causal geodesics do not branch in M. Why do we need this in our proof? Because if we don't have this, then... So the idea is always you start out with some G geodesic, and then you derive some proximate condition on some G epsilon geodesic. But if you have branching, then you may approximate another branch of this geodesic, and so the original G geodesic has absolutely nothing to do with the geometry of G epsilon. That's why we needed this non-branching condition for maximal causal geodesics. And there exists one of the following, so this is more or less, as in the classical case, a compact achronal edgeless set, a trapped point, a trapped C0 surface, or a trapped C0 submanifold. These are all in the support sense, and the Galois-Senovia condition for arbitrary trapped submanifolds, this is adapted to a distributional setting, more or less using the same techniques as the genericity condition. And in such a case, we have that MG contains incomplete causal geodesics. Especially this now provides a new interpretation, sort of a new phenomenon arising in the sense that if MG is complete, then there is still something physically catastrophic happening, namely that an observer branches into two, right, which is also not something we want. Okay, so where do we go further from this? So how low can we go in proving these kinds of results? So when if we're just interested in the causal aspects, this can be taken very, very low. So this was this is work done by Minguzzi, who studied cone structures and proved singularity theorems for such cone structures, which are very, very general objects to describe causality. Analytically, our goal, the ultimate goal, is to prove such results for the class of Gerasht-Tresham metrics, which are sort of the largest class where you can still define curvature in a distributional way. And it is probably worth it to consider metrics which are of some HS regularity, because these are always the regularities that arise as solutions of initial value problems. There is also the synthetic approach developed by Kunzinger and Seemann, which is kind of akin to Alexandrov geometry in the Riemannian setting, so Lorentzian length spaces, and for such spaces, singularity theorems have been proven by means of triangle comparison as curvature bounds. And so this is done by Grant, Kunzinger, and Seemann. And also, rather recently, there have been synthetic Ricci curvature bounds used by Cavaletti and Montino, who used an adapted version of the curvature dimension condition from Alexandrov geometry and methods from optimal transport to prove singularity theorems. So what about compatibility? So the constructor approach is very much compatible with lowering the regularity of the metric, so this is fine. Constructors and Lorentzian length spaces are also very compatible. The problematic part is the compatibility of the analytic and the synthetic approach. So if I lower my metric, so the regularity of my metric further and further, and get distributional energy conditions, how do these relate to synthetic curvature bounds, which are defined by means of triangle comparison? So this is unknown at the moment. And with this, thank you very much for your attention.
Yeah, thanks a lot for this clear review and presentation. Questions?
Okay, thank you. So I have a question about the non-branching.
Mm-hmm.
So do you expect that this hypothesis could be removed if we... So because it's useful for the to say that the limit is unique somehow when you...
Mm-hmm.
Do you expect that it can be removed just considering properties of the approximating metrics? In this case, and which could be the problems in this case?
So the problem is we have studied some rather standard, so not even geometry, just when you have some C0 ODE and you approach it by C infinity ODEs. The problem, there are examples where you can only approximate one branch. So you simply do not reach any other branch if you start out with some approximation. So the idea would be maybe to, if you have a branch, take some other approximation, so for any given approximation, this is not very likely to hold.
Okay.
So, I imagine some rather different techniques would be needed to remove this assumption.
Okay, thanks.
If there are questions from the internet, just please unmute yourself and ask the question. Another question from the audience.
Hi, thank you for the nice talk. My question is, at the beginning you gave this outline of a proof of singularity theorem, where an important element are focal points.
Mm-hmm.
But then on the next slide you say that there's no notion of focal points in C11. So how do you overcome this?
So this is the how the classical singularity theorems are always proven. In the low regularity setting, you use these regularizations. So you derive some almost curvature condition for the regularizations, and then you have conjugate and focal points.
So you find focal points of the regularized matrix.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks a lot. If there are no further questions, I will just mention one thing. So you said the analytic framework is compatible with the low regularity. So standard existence for PDE methods want HS, for the Cauchy problem, want HS spaces with S such that the metric is C1, and that's certainly compatible with everything we're doing here. But now there is this L2 theorem of Kleinerman and friends, in which the Riemann tensor is in L2.
Mm-hmm.
So this is an H2 in your language problem. The metric will not even be a C1, right? It's going to be Hölder, but not C1. And of course, this creates problem with the causality theory. But you said it doesn't. So can you just comment on that?
Do you mean the?
You said that these frameworks were actually causal and analytic are okay. So you probably had in mind S, so that the metric is C1 or.
So what I meant by causal and analytic is the. I more specifically meant the Minguzzi approach. So where he studies constructors which are, at least to my knowledge, the most general.
Yes, but he only continues or something like that, right?
Yes.
Right. Okay, but I mean, it's still there's still problem at the level of the Cauchy problem for Einstein equations, how one can make sense.
Is it true that the Gerechtstrassen approach, you have only just C0 metric, which is invertible, the inverse exists, and you have weak derivatives existent?
So yeah, I don't think you even have C0. You have like
a, I mean, you know, yeah, I mean, H1. That's that requirement is used when they want to show that there is an L2, convergence of the approximated smooth, curvature tensors to the one defined by distributional sense. So, if you have this aim, you are some thoughts about, how to solve or answer this issue, what was raised by Piotr also.
Yeah. So this is more or less sort of like a dream to reach this regularity, but at the moment I think we're still a little ways off.
Yeah, I agree that, this would be the most ideal, because this is the weakest possible assumption to define Einstein's equations at least distributional sense, but it's far still from the available techniques. Yeah. Thanks a lot for the nice.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.